And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's Tuesday, March 19th. At least this is the episode for Tuesday, March 19th. We're recording this late afternoon on Monday, March 18th. So, Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris. This is the companion episode to our Monday episode. We're going to talk about some tough pitcher ranks. And I just saw, before we started recording, news that is new to us that we should talk about briefly before we get into those tough ranks. Before we get to the news, a reminder, the Discord is open. If you want to get into the Listener League, get in ASAP. It locks tonight, Tuesday night at 10 o'clock Eastern. The link is in the Discord. We're currently on League 6. We might be on League 7 by the time you hear this, but go to the Discord to sign up for our Listener League. No in-season maintenance. Our friends at Fantrax had a very flexible format that we were able to put together thanks to the hard work of Jeff Good. Low Guppy in the Discord. Say thank you to Jeff if you get a moment to do so. The news, I don't even have a bottom for if you're watching on YouTube. Joan Duran's going to the IL with an oblique strain. Another injury to the top of the closer pool. They're calling this a moderate oblique strain. But as we talked about on Monday, it's usually a four-week sort of thing, even if it turns out to be a grade one sort of situation, because we live in an oblique game. As you said, the game is all twisting. The game is all movement. It's all torque.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it Griffin Jack's time?
I want to cycle through all my teams real quick and see how much exposure I have.
Do that while you eat your sandwich after we're done recording.
Yeah, right. That's not good on-air work. Griffin Jacks.
I think it's Griffin Jacks.
It's just weird because he's a sweeper guy, so he's going to have some trouble against the lefties. But there's not really another guy that's going to step forward. I mean, like, Caleb Thielbar throws left-handed. Maybe he'll steal some saves. And Thielbar is a sweeper guy too. So maybe they'll just have like this kind of platoon closer.
I got a name for you. Sorry, what's that? That was a weird face. Brock Stewart.
Yeah, okay, yes. I thought it might be Stewart.
I was looking at the numbers. I did not realize how good Brock Stewart was once he came back from all the injuries last year. 39 Ks against 11 walks, 27 and two-thirds innings, a 0.65 ERA, and a 108 whip. What do the stuff numbers say about Brock Stewart?
I mean, he skyrocketed velo-wise. I mean, this is a guy that even his – and this is a thing that I've noticed. So his first year converting to relieving – he had a 91.7 fastball velocity, you know, and then his second year relieving after starting, his second year full-time relieving, 97 mile an hour fastball velocity.
So like role change and then like probably some training changes and just like,
and I think you need the off season a little bit. Like, I think it's hard, to do that, you know, on the fly. It's not like you're just like, oh, okay, I'm now going to throw 97 because I don't have to go to the third inning. Brock Stewart had a 122 stuff plus and a 101 location plus. So absolutely capable of closing. And I think does not have the platoon sort of situation that you have with Jackson Thielbar. So I think everybody just takes a step closer. And I think Stewart was going to be the setup guy. Thielbar and Jax are a platoon setup guy now. And Stewart, yeah, I think Stewart, I'm going to go with your call. Stewart's the guy.
Man, Caleb Thielbar also going to the IL to start the season. It's a hamstring injury for Caleb Thielbar. So hopefully not a long-term one. But I just feel like I'm the bearer of bad news. Like, And he's hurt too. You didn't mention Desclafani. He's actually going to the IL.
Oh, I was about to mention Desclafani. I think that is interesting for one of our favorite sleepers here on Rates and Barrels. Louis Varland.
Louis Varland. Things are looking very good for Louis Varland to get a window to start to begin the season.
Yeah, and he's an exciting guy. It's not a large arsenal, but it's really good fastball and kind of a cutterish gyro slider. So it shouldn't necessarily have platoon problems, which is why you kind of want these wider arsenals. He might be a five and dive, but I think he'll be a good one.
Yeah, I'm with you on Varland. Available super late as well. A follow-up on Aaron Judge, by the way. He's projected to play on Wednesday. We'll see if that's still true by the time you hear this show on Tuesday. But that's the plan as it stands right now. He was a big topic for us at the beginning of Monday's show or in the middle of Monday's show. On to the meat and potatoes, though, of today's rundown, Eno. We're talking about tough pitching ranks. And we have an unfortunate, like, perfect example playing out at the moment. We talked about the Yuri Perez injury, not knowing right now like what imaging is revealing, not knowing just what the Marlins' plan is. I think the former probably informs the latter, expecting everything to be done in a very cautious way. He's a tough rank, and this happens every draft season. It happens with veteran pitchers that we really like. It happens with guys that could be the best pitcher in the pool, like Gerrit Cole. It happened with Kyle Bradish at the beginning of spring training. We get to points in draft season where we have pitchers who are just in the unknown when it comes to their health situation. And a draft goes off, and you're left to confront the possibility they're easily the best pitcher in the queue. So they're staring you right in the face for a couple of rounds longer than they should. And you have to play that game of chicken of, oh, do I actually want to take the chance here? Do I want to throw the dart in round 9 or 10 that maybe we're going to get good news and maybe it's just a little bit of soreness that doesn't have a tear and maybe I'll end up getting the guy that I really like and he's just going to miss the beginning part of the season instead of some random part in the middle or the end? Like, that's possible, but it's a really hard game to play and it's really hard to kind of put it on paper. Like, how do you handle Perez or even Gerrit Cole, who we have a timetable for right now as far as when he's likely to ramp up again, but we still don't know once he ramps up if he's going to feel good. Everything's going to go as smoothly as we'd like it to.
I mean, I think the easiest answer, but it's too simple, is just not to not draft them. You know, leave that headache for somebody else. The problem is that that opinion becomes pervasive. Then that guy drops. And at some point, he's got to be a value. And so figuring that out when you're doing ranks, especially when you're doing ranks for people with all sorts of different IL situations, is just almost impossible. So I've just come up with this idea that I just basically put all the injury risks next to each other. I put all the guys that that are good, but we don't know how many innings we're going to get next to each other. So Shane Baz and Nick Lodolo are near each other. You know, they're kind of in this grouping a little bit. But, you know, you've got Carlos Rodon, Justin Verlander, and Yuri Perez to some extent in another bucket, you know, with I think, Gerrit Cole. And I also tried to put it up against, like, what are you missing out on? So, you know, I put those guys around 50 because after 50, you're missing out on Seth Lugo or Mitch Keller. Would you rather pick an unknown quantity of Gerrit Cole or Seth Lugo?
Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, right. So he has to be above that. So, you know, that's the sort of would you rather. But when, you know, above that, you've got more like, would you rather, you know, Gerrit Cole for 4 months or Bailey Ober for 6?
Those are the tougher questions.
Sonny Gray for 5.5 or Brian Wu for 6. You know, that's where I'm like, man, well, Brian Wu could come in here and be lights out too. And he's not hurt right now. You know, so that's where it gets really tough to rank those players.
One thought I had was you could take... So take a player like Carlos Rodon, who you don't project for a full season, but has very good skills. Like, you have high expectations on a per inning basis for what he might do. Where you rank someone like Rodon when he's healthy, expecting him to break, might be something in the neighborhood of where you should lower someone like Gerrit Cole to. Because Cole has a more established track record, but he's also hurt right now and could be hurt badly, depending on how things progress. that's kind of like where the risk reward starts to make sense for me. I mean, I think when you look at Kyle Bradish right now, he is exactly what you described, where the whole draft market gets to a point where they say, ah, I just don't like what I see. Earliest he went in the four weekend NFBC main events was pick 340. Latest was 432. So you're looking at like pick 380 for an ADP in those four drafts. Outside of the top 300, if you're telling me I've got a shot, let's say it's a 1-in-4 chance that Bradish is healthy once he comes back and he's the guy we expect him to be, at that price, I'll actually take that. It just falls back into our ongoing conversation about how many guys you're waiting on. He's the one you're waiting on, so you're not throwing the dart at Shane Baz and Kyle Bradish most likely in the same league unless you have IL spots. If you have IL spots, you could play it a lot differently. So I think Bradish has fallen to the point now where I'm more comfortable rolling the dice on him where he goes than I will be on Yuri Perez until we have more information on Gerrit Cole. Because there's still a significant ask on Gerrit Cole right now. You're still not getting a ridiculous discount. Pick 160 was the ADP from those four drafts. 102 was the earliest. 206 was the latest.
Yeah, and you know, there's beyond that, there's just the question of how do I learn this and ingest this process for players who are not yet injured? You know, like what we're discussing here is injury risk. And of course, like people who are injured now are bigger injury risk than people who are not injured now.
This is true.
But, you know, I did pull up a thing here. I wrote a piece about how Keith Meister was saying, you know, the sweeper is the problem. I don't know, man. My contribution to that story with Ken Rosenthal, with, you know, about Keith Meister's comments that the power change and the sweeper were part of why, you know, we're having so many revisions on Tommy John's and part of why the injury problem. And my pushback was, no, it's the velo. And I just thought, I'm going to do a simple leaderboard here. 80 innings last year. So that just pretty much gets rid of relievers, right? 80 innings last year, sorted by fastball, velo. Bobby Milther, healthy. Hunter Green was not healthy last year. Sandy Alcantara, TJ. Yuri Perez, hurt now. Grayson Rodriguez, Spencer Strider, pretty good. Shohei Ohtani, Tommy John. Shane McClanahan, Tommy John. Jesus Sassardo, healthy for now. Gerrit Cole, hurt. Cole Reagans, many, many times hurt. Luis Severino, hurt. Tyler Glasnow, hurt. But coming back, I guess. Luis Castillo seems like in a healthy part of his career, but last year lost, in 2022, lost like a month or two. Edward Cabrera, sore shoulder. Luis L. Ortiz, Taj Bradley, sure something. I forget what it is. George Kirby, Luis Medina, Josh Winkowski, Johnny Brito. So it gets a little better after that. But in the top 10, what do we have? We had... two TJs, three TJs in the top 10 in velo last year. We had three Tommy John surgeries and then another four guys that were hurt and three guys that were healthy.
Sweet.
but again, are you going to then say to yourself, hey, I'm not going to draft anybody with the plus velo? Sorry, I'm not drafting Spencer Strider because he throws too hard.
You're definitely not doing that. and I think the problem is there's some overlap. There's some guys that fall into multiple buckets, not multiple as in like...
Oh, like they've been hurt. They're also like multiple injury. Like these are different guys. Some of them have been healthy most of their career. But I would also say Gerrit Cole has been healthy most of his career.
Right. He's avoided it for the most part. So that's great.
But you can't just be like, well, I'm taking Spencer Strider. Well, he's had TJ. I'm taking Grayson Rodriguez. He's been healthy most of his career. Well, it's been a pretty short career, dude.
Bobby Miller. Bobby Miller is a tough rank for another reason. Mm-hmm. He's not a tough rank because he throws hard. He's a tough rank because he has less than a full season in the big leagues. And you don't know like how he's going to hold up. And you don't know... as teams see him a little more, if they're going to make some adjustments and he's going to go through one of those adjustment periods. This would also apply to Grayson Rodriguez. If Bobby Miller was at the top of that leaderboard for fastball velocity, Grayson Rodriguez is like sixth. Same kind of thing. We saw both of these guys have a lot of success last year. Rodriguez made the adjustments to his pitch mix and was just awesome in the second half of the year. So are you finding that as much as you like these guys, that they are really difficult to rank because there's still something we're missing with them as far as like a level of confidence? Like, you have to put them ahead of guys that have done it for a long time, that even do it with less stuff, right? There's like some tension between how good your stuff is and not having the track record to fall back on, because a lot of times younger players have better stuff than the old guys.
Yeah. And one of the things that bothers me about Stuff Plus from a sort of modeling a statistical standpoint is that there's so many relievers in the pool that you don't know how much of the predictive quality of the model comes from predicting relievers. You know, this is something that we've all struggled with as we've used this and like tried to, you know, use it to look at starting pitchers. Is there are pitchers with bad Stuff Plus that do well as starting pitchers, and you know, it doesn't seem to be as predictive. And so I think that's what we're getting at, is that for these young starting pitchers, we can look at the model and say, well, they have great stuff, so you know, they're going to be good. Except we also know that there have been the Graham Ashcrafts of the past that have had great stuff and not been great starting pitchers. Like, we need them to be starting pitchers. We don't need them to be successful pitchers. The model needs them to be successful pitchers. So if they went to relieving or whatever, the model would be like, see, I was right. They were a good pitcher. But no, we need them to be starting pitchers. And so it's instructive to, like, you know, look at Bobby Miller. He has 11% strikeout rate this spring. Grayson Rodriguez has a 13% strikeout rate. Now, it's super early, but the fact that these guys have a combined 11 strikeouts, it's 11 strikeouts in 16 innings these guys have. And yet I'm as excited about them as any, and I'm pushing them. But when do you stop pushing them? And they cost more than, you know, like Brian Wu mentions on the podcast, up to 2 or 3 at this point, but
need a counter.
But like, I'm excited about DL Hall and Bowden Francis. I have them, you know, right around 100, right? That you can feel like, I'm going to push these guys because of what I see in the stuff, right? And the opportunity cost is not as high. And nobody will curse your name because they drafted Bowden Francis in the 25th round and it didn't work out. But the stakes are higher when it comes to somebody you're going to take in your third or fourth round. And Bobby Miller and Grayson Rodriguez seem like they check all the boxes. Grayson Rodriguez, by more traditional projections, is like a top 20 pitcher. He's right there with Zach Gallen and Freddy Peralta and Blake Snell, you know, as an $18 pitcher by the bat. You know, he's ready to go, but will he turn them all into strikeouts? Will he find the right arsenal? Will he do the little things that turn you from a good pitching prospect to a good starting pitcher in the big leagues? And I will say this, it seems to be taking forever. And I think there's some statistical evidence that it takes us longer and longer to produce a starting pitcher now. Mm-hmm. We don't have like, remember Jose Fernandez came up and he was like 20 or whatever? And Ventura, you were not a Ventura, like, they were young and they just stepped in and they were brilliant. You know, I feel like we don't have that story as much anymore. I don't know if it's the hitters are getting better or the offensive rules or what it is, or the way that pitchers are being treated in the minor leagues. They're coming up with 60 pitches. You know, if you look in the minor leagues, the median pitches per appearance for a starter is like 60. So how are you going to teach him the finer points of, you know, getting through the lineup 3 times and, you know, showing him this pitch and not this pitch? If they only go 60, if they're only going 60 pitches in the minor leagues, they're just throwing as hard as they can and, you know, throwing their best stuff, trying to make the machine go brr, you know, they're just trying to make the stat cast look good. So, you know, what we're seeing with Bobby Miller and Grayson Rodriguez is these are two young pitchers who have had the machines go brr, but they have to then, you know, figure out how to get the outs.
Yeah, I'm looking back the last 10 seasons. If you cut it off at age 23 and set the
very
minimum,
few pitchers, right?
Yeah, minimum to 70 innings. Like, that opens up a few. If you go down to 21, there's hardly anybody since. Oh, right. And this goes back to 2014. There are 10 pitchers who have 70 or more innings in the big leagues, age 21 or younger, going back the last 10 seasons. Michael Soroka, Roberto Ozuna, Lance McCullers Jr., Julio Urias, Jaime Barria, Yuri Perez, Luis Patino, Jordan Hicks, Ryan Weathers, Jose Suarez.
And that's a mixed bag. I mean, you didn't just name a bunch of stars.
No, and a few of those guys didn't have, like,
they just had to, there were some of those who just had to be pressed into service because they had to be, you know.
Barria, Suarez, Weathers, those guys didn't have expectations like that. McCullers was a big name prospect.
Well, give me 100, go to 23. Fine, go to 23 and give me 100 innings. I wanted only starters.
100 innings? Soroka, McCullers, Urias, and Barria. That's it.
It's hard.
It's hard to get innings that quickly in your career. I think maybe part of this, I mean, having a lost 2020 within this window is part of it. Pitchers blowing out more when they're younger, slowing things down. That's probably a factor as well.
But it could be some of this coaching aspect. Like, imagine if, like, I'm a minor league pitching coach and, like, you know, the organization has told me, and I've worked for a progressive organization, like a one with a good player development, right? And they told me, here are our key, what is it? Key performance indicators. Here are KPIs. You know, I'm a pitching coach and you say, here are KPIs. We love stuff plus. We want all your pitchers' stuff pluses to go up. You know, we love this. We love strikeouts. Strikeouts minus walks. Okay. And then you're the pitching coach and you go, okay, I can do the stuff plus one. I'll just, throw your breaking ball harder or get throw more sweep on that thing. Mike Pacioli just came out with a thing with the minor league stat. You can do some minor league stat cast searching. And he just did, like, how many sliders have 12 inches of sweep, like, by percentage? How many sliders have by organization or whatever? And it was like, the Yankees, number one in sliders of sweep. Yeah, but they're not, like, churning out amazing starting pitchers, you know? But that can happen if you're, like, in a sort of a KPI environment because you're like, well, I know their stuff plus, so I know that they love sweep, and so I'm just going to coach up all these guys to throw sweepers. And that's what they did. But they turn out a bunch of starting pitchers. We'll see. Luis Gil and Warren, or Will Warren, are the guys we're watching this year. But there's that sort of, you can have a KPI based, and that's smart player development. It's good because you know why it's good? It's because then I can evaluate you as a coach. I told you what numbers I'm evaluating you on, and I can fire you if you don't make those numbers. That's good because it's at least something a framework we can agree on, right? These are the things we care about. If you can't move the needle on the things we care about, then I'm sorry. I got to get another coach in here, right? But you can game the system. You could just coach to the system, coach to the KPIs, almost too much, I feel like. And then produce guys who come to the major leagues and tell me, like Clark Schmidt, which is, I can't just throw my best stuff plus pitches over and over again. Like, there's a little bit more to starting pitching than that. And that's, I mean, I think there could be something there where there's the way that we think of good player development is not necessarily turning out good starters. It's turning out pitchers with good pitches, which is not the same thing as good starting pitchers.
I also wonder if there's a problem with the non-linear aspect of player development on the hitting and the pitching side, where you don't have groups of players that can test each other well enough. Aligning a player's skills at the proper level and then finding enough other players who can actually,
like, how many good
push them
hitters
to fix
is Will
their
Warren
flaws
pitching to in AAA?
Right. It's not Will Warren's fault.
Right. And there's politics too. You got to put Will Warren at AAA if you want Clayton Beater to make double A. Like, there's like, you have to do things according to, like, the way that the way that they were drafted in the first rounders and stuff. Like, there is such a thing as failing upwards at the minor leagues.
Sure.
Where you're just like, oh, I was a number one draft pick, and, you know, they have another guy, a 17-year-old they're excited about, and they need room for him here. So I guess I'm the shortstop for the AAA team now, but no one's that excited about it, you know? So, yeah. Will Warren, you know, who's he facing?
Well, yeah. So, and that's been something that I know, like, Keith Law talked about it a lot on the Athletic Baseball Show the last couple of years. He'd say the gap, it seems like it's wider to me than it's really ever been between AAA and the big leagues. But if every level is just not as good or as deep as it's been in the past, because different organizations are also on different timelines for players, you're just getting a mixed bag. Like, you're getting good competition, but you're not getting consistently great competition that's age appropriate or skill level appropriate, because everybody's just playing from different spots. I think that's one of the hardest things about player development is that you, even if, like, even if every single team evaluated players by the same standards and then the levels were right, some teams wouldn't have enough guys, organizations wouldn't have enough guys to play on every team because they don't have enough good players. Like, there's all these other issues that would come up.
And then if you, as an analyst, were trying to be like, okay, I'm going to look at this player and I'm going to adjust for the quality of competition, no matter what, your appraisal of the true talent of that player has noise. If you then add, I'm going to appraise the true talent of all the people he's opposing, that has noise. So whatever this new thing is where you're like, oh, I've talent adjusted this player. Well, you just put noise on top of noise for sure.
Yeah, you took a sample and you made it so small that now the sample is harder to rely
on. Yeah, right.
So that's no good.
So he faced three good batters in AAA last year and he got them all out. Well, he's amazing.
How about this? Here's one other thing about pitching development and just thinking about where the game is and who the best pitcher in fantasy baseball is right now. Maybe the best pitcher in real baseball, too. It could be Spencer Strider. I think I'm still
he's
not
sure. He's
the
best scenario of this, make them have good pitches, right?
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, here are two good engineered pitches. Yeah.
But think about this for just a second. The best pitcher in baseball, if it's Spencer Strider, wasn't even in the rotation for a team that we think is really good and really smart
in 2022.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like the beginning of the season 2 years ago, he was a reliever. Spencer Strider didn't start a game until May 30th of 2022. So
yeah.
Like that's
who's that guy this year?
He got to the top fast, like real fast. And we had this conversation in a different form with Jacob deGrom several years ago where I thought it was wild that the best pitcher in baseball, one of the best pitchers on a per inning basis of all time, was a two-way player in college at Stetson, a ninth round pick.
The shortstop and the closer.
How wild is that? And he didn't debut in the big leagues until he was 26. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
It takes time, but everybody's on a different timetable, and with pitching it just seems like it can click so fast. I think that or those things are all kind of pushed into how we look at pitching, and we can look at Bobby Miller and Grayson Rodriguez and when he was healthy Yuri Perez and guys like Shane McClanahan and Shane Boz, and we can say, whoa, this is first round, second round stuff if it all comes together. And then we kind of build up in our minds like, well, this might be the year, and we want to be right because being right has a huge payoff. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, if there's groupthink on this group of pitchers that makes them so pricey that they have to be good and stay healthy for a full big league season, things that they're doing for the first time.
Yeah, it's possible I have Bobby Miller and Grayson Argus too high.
Maybe.
You know, you have Zach Eflin right there, like...
It's just sort of like, well, are you okay with someone else being right instead? Because I almost feel like we're overestimating
that's the FOMO,
the likelihood
don't draft
that it all
based
clicks.
On FOMO, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. So I think that's a really tough group of pitchers because you want those pitchers. And I've found that when I build teams where they're not really a fit or an option, I feel better about myself. I know we're not playing a self-esteem based game.
But this is also the Luis Robert thing where you've just done other things so you don't have to do it.
I don't have to deal. I'm such a non-confrontational person. I will drive around the block twice until the neighbor goes inside if I don't want to talk to the neighbor. I'm not actually like that with my neighbors. But that's the level of, I don't want to confront this problem. That I'm going to draft this way so I don't have to deal with these players. I'm going to draft this way because I think these players are bad value. That's a better reason. That could be one to actually pursue.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
There's more than just this group, though. Zach Gallen. If you if you're a hero long enough, you become a villain, right? There's some.
Yeah, we
love Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen. Go back to 2019. We had 87 fantasy baseball podcasts at The Athletic. We all loved Zach Gallen. We loved Zach Gallen so much. We had listeners of Under the Radar. I think it was Steve G, one of the Steve G's. There's more than one Steve G.
Yeah.
Steve G thought we were talking about Zach Allen and was like, I can't find Zach Allen. You guys keep talking about this Zach Allen. And we said, oh, no, it's Zach Gallen. And it's with an E, not an O. It's not like a gallon of milk.
Right.
And now everyone knows how to spell Zach Gallen's name. And now all of a sudden, Zach Gallen does the things he's supposed to do, pitches really well, deals with injury, comes back, gives you quality, gives you volume, and now you've got model disagreement?
Yeah, I've got a projected 4 ERA for him. Yeah, I think it's because, you know, what we have seen is a sort of frittering away of the stuff. You know, you've seen a little bit of the velo going down. The stuff plus for the season last year was 103, which is actually pretty low for where I have him drafted, where I have him ranked. I still have him ranked 13th, but he's the only guy with a 4 PPERA, like a 4 projected ERA, until you get to Cole Reagans at 24, who's also, I think, in this list. You know, so I've got him, you know, maybe 10 ranks ahead of where my model says I should have him. And another thing you'll see, if you look at the velo graphs over time, is just that it was softer and softer as the season went on, and a little bit more sort of game to game variation too on his average fastball. So I just worry that, you know, right now it looks like here's a guy who has 4 above average pitches in command. You know, where does the stuff come off? But I also just said to myself, and this one, I don't agree with the model. And like literally in my little, you know, blurb that goes next to it, I'm like, sometimes the model spits out something that you just don't understand. So you just move on, you know? So, you know, I think, you know, Zach Gallen has demonstrated enough over the last 2 years that I believe in him. But I also think it's interesting that we decided that he's one of the more volumey guys and less injury risk guy, but he's got a partially torn ligament in his elbow right now, you know? And, you know, it must be a state of the modern game to think that a guy who, you know, has 180 and 210 innings is all of a sudden a workhorse. I'm not sure that I want to anoint him workhorse.
I think that's the same thing people say about Pablo Lopez now. I think they both, whatever health grade you want to put on Gallen, I think you put the same grade on Pablo Lopez. I think they're both really good pitchers. I just think the risk from a health perspective is not something I'm in love with, even as someone that takes on my occasional Tyler Glasnow share. Because I think the difference is Tyler Glasnow has the ceiling you can dream on a little bit more. I don't know what else Lopez or Gallen can do to like to vault themselves up higher. So if I'm going to take on that risk, I want someone that can be a first rounder. I don't think Pablo Lopez is a future first rounder in fantasy. I don't think Zach Gallen's a future first rounder in fantasy. I think Tyler Glasnow has that ceiling, and because of his health, hasn't reached it yet. I think if he does what Lopez and Gallen have done the last 2 years and comes out healthy this year, that's where he's going. That's the difference. That's why I'm there. But the model disagreement with the projections, I'm glad you're a human about it. I think there are some people that run a projection system and are like, this is what it says. This is what I'm doing. And I feel like people like that, when it's fantasy baseball, it's fine. In other facets of life, that's kind of like dangerous. Like to just be like, model says this, here we go. It's like, whoa. Hold on a minute.
Does it really know everything?
Let's talk through this a little bit. Let's just see if there's something we might have figured out that the machine is not quite accounting for.
You know, last week of college being like, well, you know, the models say that, you know, most people meet their wives at college, so.
Yeah.
Somebody this week is getting lucky.
I got to meet somebody now. I got to get out there. Like, no.
Yeah.
Just keep doing what you're doing. It'll probably work itself out later.
I mean, Gallen has been the 6th and 8th best starting pitcher the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, he's really good.
In fantasy, according to the auction calculator. I mean, should he be higher than 13? That's what gets so hard. And then like Cole Reagans is actually, not only is he in this bin, because the model spits out a 4.43 ERA for Cole Reagans, but he's also in the last bin where we only really have like 100 innings that were like, whoa. I mean, like they were like, whew, you know, but
it was
still
ridiculous.
Not like 2 or 3 seasons in a row. So, Reagans was a really hard rank for me for the same reason. And then there's guys that have, been, I think like, you know, Edward Rodriguez was really good last year, but there's a new bucket for these guys. Yeah. Edward Rodriguez, the model doesn't like him. So there's a model disagreement. They're all in a way model disagreements of one sort or another, but this one, the non-buzzy veterans, Eduardo Rodriguez is in there. Merrill Kelly is in there. Chris Bassett, who, put another counter on the Chris Bassett on this podcast counter. I think Jose Barrios.
He counts. Yep. He's become one of these guys. You sort of age into this by hanging around, pitching pretty well, not breaking down. You've been around long enough where your ceiling has been lowered. And maybe you've even had a bad enough season where, you know, people are just afraid. Eduardo Rodriguez has had some downside seasons that have scared people away, probably permanently. So I get it.
But then there's a 4.67 ERA projection on there. So it's still a model disagreement, you know. But it's a certain kind where they're doing all those things that I was talking about earlier. They're doing all the little things that may not show up in the model. And you can't model the world.
I'm not saying you shouldn't try, but I think you do have to accept that some things are not going to fit into the model. Like the outliers are probably the most interesting thing about having a model, trying to figure out why you can't model them and what they're doing differently and what should maybe be included in the future versions of the model.
I do.
This is why LOTM exists. This is why the whole concept is, it's not this galaxy brain thing. It's a, hey, everybody else is looking at this and that thing over there, but what about this other thing? Like maybe this could be worthwhile.
And then another thing you could do also is be like, okay, here's this grouping of pitchers that the model that I follow doesn't really like. Let me not be early on these guys, you know, but let me get some of them, you know, have some diversity of approach in your building of a staff. Let me get some of these, but let me pay less. So let me just group all these together. And if I end up with Aaron Civale, because for some reason the ADP is lower on Aaron Civale than Merrill Kelly, but I think that they're kind of similar guys, then I'll just take Aaron Civale, you know? And so I guess I'm not going to get Jordan Montgomery. I'm not going to get Merrill Kelly. I do have some shares of Braxton Garrett. It's unfortunate. The injury is unfortunate, but I think he's in this group a little bit. He's sort of like a young old. You know, he hasn't established he's in this group, but he kind of gives me whiffs of being in this group.
He doesn't throw hard. He's got a lot of pitches. It's.
You know, so I've got some shares of Braxton Garrett. I'll take that. Who do you think is Marcus Stroman is kind of, you know, in this bucket in his own way.
Doesn't have a team yet.
Kenta Maeda.
Yeah, Maeda.
Kenta Maeda is, I think, one that I would love to end up with a couple shares of. And then my young old that I've been pimping a little bit is Dean Kramer. He's got the same thing. He's just got a lot of pitches. I think he's got a little bit of a feel for pitching. And if he can just make one pitch a little bit better, I think the whole thing could really work. So I would just say that's actually my universal advice for this podcast is in each of these buckets that we're discussing, don't be totally out of any of them, I don't think.
Right.
But don't necessarily set the minimum pick, you know?
Don't set the min pick if you can help it. I think if there's a bucket of pitchers that I would be comfortable ignoring, it might actually be that high ceiling future ace that are already priced up group. It might be the Bobby Miller, Grayson Rodriguez, Yuri Perez, the exciting guys, the guys you want to go pay money to go watch. Like it's so weird, but I think it's because you're paying the most for that group. And you can get young, exciting pitching in Fab or even later in your draft. And yeah, you don't have the certainty of role. You don't have as much, you don't have 124 great innings to rely on at the big league level. But I think you can win that way. I mean, I think back to the year George Kirby debuted. It was a big splashy Fab ad for me in Tout that year. He was expensive everywhere, but it was worth every penny and probably double that in Fab because he was just so good.
You know, draft this, not that, you know, the slightly worse version later for a lot cheaper. You know, I can name some guys that I think, you know, Kyle Harrison, Ryan Pepio, Brian Bayo, Cutter Crawford. You know, there are, you know, Louis Varland, who just, you know, probably got it. Tanner Houck, Joe Boyle, you know, there's, you know, obvious flaws on these guys that, you know, that are make them different than those other guys, but young guys that have roles that probably will pitch most of the year that if they made things click, you know, could at the end of the year be like sort of top 25 type pitchers. And that's what you're hoping to get anyway with Miller and Rodriguez, although you've told yourself that you might get a first round pitcher out of it.
That's how you do it. That's how you pay the tax. You tell yourself that story. I've done it before, and I don't know that it's always worked out the best for me. But Kyle Harrison is sort of interesting because he loops back around to something we were talking about earlier, the lack of young players that come up on the pitching side and have a lot of success. Kyle Harrison debuted as he turned 21 last summer, and by like K-minus BB percentage was actually above 15%. It's really good for a guy that's just getting his first opportunity in the big leagues. He's got a great home park. This, I think it's actually reflected in the projections. The ratio projections aren't bad. They don't stand out as great. That's part of the problem. Like if you kind of look at the projections for Kyle Harrison and say, okay, you know, 4.23 ERA, actually not that bad in the current game. 4.35 whips a little high because of the concerns about walks, but he might be a more useful pitcher than people realize, even if he's still figuring it out. And there's still plenty of ceiling with Kyle Harrison. Kyle Harrison's starting to like point me into the maybe I don't care about command either group. The team I root for doesn't seem to care that much about it. Between Misurowski and DL Hall and like,
oh, maybe, that's right.
But maybe the command, maybe this is the buying opportunity. The guys that have multiple pitches, shaky command, but good stuff. Maybe that's where everybody else is saying, ah, too risky for me. It's like, not really. Not too risky at price. Kyle Harrison's going at pick 150. Yeah, that's too risky. Kyle Harrison doesn't go at pick 150.
Yeah. I was just talking to Chris Lang in a drive line. I had some drinks with him in Arizona while I was down there. And that was a really fun session. We were talking a little bit about that finding that they had for command effects or whatever. They tracked the glove and they said that pitchers miss their target by 13 inches on average. And so I think we overvalue how good their command is. And so I brought that up again with Chris, because they at Driveline can actually have a very good sense of where the target is. Because, you know, using the catcher's mitt as a proxy for target is not great, because you'll have some catchers, a lot of for framing, they'll do something where they kind of go low and then try to come up at the pitch so that bring everything back to the strike zone, you know. And so there's different techniques with your glove. Sometimes they'll hit the ground with a glove just to be like, you know, keep the thing down. Are you saying that the ground is the target, or you know what I mean? Like, so catcher's glove is not the greatest proxy for actual intended target. But if you're at a driveline or at a tread, you can say, okay, throw this in the A1 pocket, you know, because there's nine pockets. Throw this A1, throw this A2, whatever it is, you know, name the pockets, throw this there. And I was like, so it's better than 13, right? And he's like, no, no, it's not. So I think generally, it's tough though. So on the flip side, Alex Chamberlain has just come out with a really interesting piece where he defined for like location plus, quote unquote, like for these location numbers, he defined it more loosely. So instead of saying, you know, this 1-inch by 1-inch area is a location, he did it more like this 5-inch by 5-inch area is a location. And so if we define this more loosely, do pitchers have more command year to year? And he said, yes, there's evidence that pitchers have repeatable command year to year if you define it more loosely. But I'm like, in my head right now, I'm saying, okay, so what you're saying is, if we agree that pitchers don't have command, then pitchers have command year to year. Like if we just loosen what we call command, if we make the threshold worse for having command, then they have command. So are we just making the threshold worse? You know, so I generally agree with you. That's why I will always fall for a Joe Boyle. That's why I'll always fall for a Kyle Harrison. My biases are on the table. I do think command is important, but it's just a weird thing that you have to work in almost on with your brain and not the model. Just kind of watch or think. I don't know. It's one of the frontiers. Command is definitely interesting. I don't want to say that nobody has any command, but I definitely am a stuffist.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, it was opening day and all these players were coming in with their opening day drip. And I'm never going to look like Ellie De La Cruz and be 6'6" with that body. So I'm not going to pull off that look. But I was really jealous of all these guys with their fitted shirts. I love the way a fitted shirt looks. So I went to Inoshino.com and got my own fitted shirt. And, you know, I got a nice flannel. I wore it to the live podcast that we did in New York and got some compliments on it. You know, what's really cool is you go through this experience where you get to, you know, customize the lapels, the lining, the monograms, the pocket flaps, anything you want. If it's a suit or a shirt, you give them your measurements and you get a shirt that fits you perfectly. It's bespoke without this like big price tag. $89 for fitted shirts. Suits start at $499. Just really high quality stuff. So whether it's opening day and you're at the ballpark and you're trying to interview a ball player, or you just want to look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor, when you wear Indochino, you go to Indochino.com today and use the code RATES to get 10% off of any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code RATES.
Building on this thought, just a little bit more. You know, if you had to be a scout, that was your job. If you've been scouting, let's say you've been scouting for 10 years. I feel like you'd learn a lot that would give you a better feel for game plan and what a pitcher would be trying to execute in every situation once you've been in it for that long. Mm-hmm. So I do think, as subjective as command is, if you understand game planning well enough and you know where they were likely trying to execute, you could probably grade command reasonably well.
Yeah, that was how Command Plus was done.
Yeah, like I kind of believe it.
Intended target. Yeah,
I think he's it's hard. I think it's very, very, very hard to do it. I think it's an excellent skill if you have that. But you know, for the rest of us, the rest of us that are watching mostly from TV, especially, I think figuring out command is just, it's like wearing a blindfold and just hoping that you guess right.
I also mean it sort of from the standpoint of like, well, okay, Tom Tango ran the numbers and Location Plus didn't have much predictive quality. And so, you know, it could be tempting to never look at the Location Plus bucket, you know, and I'm suggesting that maybe it's worth looking at that. That's as far as I'll go with, you know, sort of pushing command. It's like, I do have that example still of the 50 breakout young arms last year. Only Ashby didn't have above average Location Plus on his on a hard pitch, like a fastball or a slider. So if you want to be in the 49 out of 50, they better have command of some pitch. And that's how I see it. I think Location Plus and for what it's worth, when Tom Tango did his predictive stuff, he didn't say, did this predict that they were a starter or not? He did the same thing that I was talking about earlier about the relievers. Right? Did this predict outcomes in the future?
Did you get to the big leagues or not?
And we don't care just that they make the big leagues. We care. We care if Taj Bradley is a starter or a reliever. Yes, yeah. He could be a closer, but we care this year, can he be a starter? And so you kind of have to, I think for us, we have to look at Location Plus and we have to at least find one hard pitch that they can locate.
Do you think it's interesting that Taj has, on the Fangraphs scouting grades, has 50 command with future 60, given what he is struggling with?
I mean, maybe it's stuff chasing to some extent. You know, you have Taj Bradley throw his best pitches because they're the best stuff pitches, but which are the ones he can command? And when does he make that transition? I think a lot of that transition happens at the big league level. Because in the minor league level, the umpires aren't great, the hitters aren't great, and so you're just throwing your best stuff. You get to the major league level, and that little bit of command difference makes a big difference.
It's a good way to think about it. The non-buzzy veterans, the boring old guys, though, generally an under-drafted group. And yeah, can you build an entire rotation of these guys? I don't think so.
Pretty boring. Do you really want Miles Michaelis on your team?
I just think where do you think it hurts you more? Do you think it hurts you more in Ks, or do you think it actually hurts you more in ratio damage potentially? Because you're getting bulk usually from these guys, so they can make up ground.
It's,
if they have a lower K
a
rate,
K's
they can come
problem.
Up.
I mean, Miles Michaelis, 16% K projection.
He's kind of brutal, like for these purposes. But
Kelly is better, and I have, I have 50 draft spots between them, but Kelly, 21% strikeout rate projection. I have him right next to Nick Pivetta, who has a 26% strikeout rate projection.
Mm.
So I think it'll hurt you in strikeout rates, and I bet you it'll hurt you in homers, because we found a lot of evidence that Stuff Plus, helps you project home run rate better.
Yeah, see, that makes me think that the ratio risk is a little bit greater. Where you have a higher range of outcomes for the ERA could go completely wrong. The K's,
this is why guys
think
like this pop.
Be there.
What this is why guys like this pop, right? Like, think about this. If stuff has something to do with home run rates, and home run rates are noisy, and you have these guys with low stuff that do pop sometimes, maybe they're just popping in the years where they're home run lucky.
Most likely, yeah.
Which we know
that's a lot of it.
We know that's a thing. And when they're home run unlucky, they have the Miles Michaelis 2023. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why I don't. This is actually the group that I might peace out on myself.
You think you'd avoid this group?
When I'm buying Dean Kramer, I'm cool. I mean,
that's super late though.
Cheap and free, you know. But I'm not paying Merrill Kelly prices.
Jeez, even Bassett last year though. Bassett had a bad year, air quotes, for home runs. 1.26 homers per nine was up.
He did everything else well.
Compared to his previous three seasons, though, it was up in home run rate. Walk rate was a little worse, but about the same. K rate was in line with all of his norms. It all just seemed like it kind of worked for him, and because of volume, it was good for Ks too. 186 Ks, you'll take that. I mean, I think this group's really tough. I think you do want at least some exposure to it. And I think the hard part is, when will the wheels fall off? Like,
yeah, that too. Yeah.
Because I feel like the decline is less, it's less likely to be gradual with pitchers like this, even though we talk about this group.
That's
as
my risk
many
that
of them
I
having,
talk about Kenta Maeda, right? Like, at some point he'll throw 87 with his fastball and it's just not going to work.
Right, because then I think that it's home run rate through the roof. That's mm-hmm. the year the home run rate just goes from
not very good to
goes up to like two homers per nine. And yeah. it's a train wreck. Yeah, he's flirted with that a couple of times. I wonder how much the home park can protect him in Detroit and keep that at bay just a little bit longer. They probably think about 2 years since they gave him a 2-year
yeah,
deal.
That's right, yeah.
If I had to estimate it.
Do we have one more?
Or
are we saving the rest for New York?
I think we should save it because I think it's too big of a conversation to squeeze in. So it'll be in the feed later in the week. If you can't join us live.
You've just been listening in these last two podcasts to at least a small preview of at least one section that we've left the tough ranks. We've left a couple tough ranks of hitters and a couple tough ranks for pitchers. We'll get Mike Petriello's input on some of the hitters, and we'll get Nick Pollock's input on the rest of the groups, the tough ranks for pitchers. I think these are good discussions to keep having, so it's all right.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Reminder, get into the Discord if you want to get into the Listener League. It locks 10 o'clock Eastern, Tuesday night, so be sure to get in there. I just opened up the news for one last look before we end up heading to the airport tomorrow.
What happened? Everyone's hurt.
Yordan Alvarez left Monday's game against the Marlins earlier than anticipated. He followed the ball off his left foot on Friday, apparently, and then there was some
still
report
hurts.
Of an allergy. I don't know.
This one, I'm going to ignore.
I'm going to ignore it for now.
Yeah.
I'm be keeping a close eye as more drafts. I've got one Tuesday night. I've got actually got one Monday night, too, that'll already have happened by the time you hear this.
I've got a main event coming up this week.
Yeah, Saturday, or is it during the week?
I think it's gonna be a weekend one.
Yeah, probably Saturday. That's when most of them
doing one. You know, one of them was like the Thursday after our live pod, and I was like, nope.
Nah, not a good idea.
Not happening.
You know yourself well enough to know at this point that is not a good idea. But hopefully, if you're hearing this, you are in the area. We can see you at Other Half in Domino Park, the Williamsburg location. Should be a lot of fun. 6:30 pod start. We'll be at the brewery at like 3 for the replays of Dodgers and Padres on both Wednesday and Thursday. Should be a lot of fun. Hope to see many of you out there. Give us a follow on Twitter. Eno is at EnoSaris. I am at Derek from Riper. The pod is at Rates and Barrels. That's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We're back in the feed on Thursday.
Thanks for listening.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.